from the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio, this is Deconstructing Dinner.
And welcome to Deconstructing Dinner, a syndicated weekly radio show and podcast produced at Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY, in Nelson, British Columbia. This show is heard on radio stations around the world, including CHSR 97.9 FM, Fredericton, New Brunswick. I'm John Steinman. On today's episode, we listen in on some great interviews and tours with the operators of Spearville Flour Mill, a locally owned and operated business in New Brunswick that has for over 25 years been supplying the Maritime Provinces of Canada with local, organically grown grains and foods, while supporting over 30 farmers in the area. We'll also meet Nova Scotia farmer Andrew Kernahan, who is one of those farmers supplying Spearville with organically grown grains. Deconstructing Dinner visited with Spearville and Andrew in September 2009 while we toured throughout the two provinces. Similar to the efforts that we've documented on our Local Grain Revolution series, developing and maintaining local organic grain economies is no easy task, in light of the vast majority of grains consumed in North America coming from areas where grain growing has, for over the past 100 years, become as centralized as it has. But while the Spearville Flour Mill has not operated without enduring many challenges, they are a great example of the role of food processors in supporting regional farmers and economies, and the power with which demand from the eating public for local organic products can generate some necessary muscle to get those products onto the shelves of national grocery retailers. We'll also learn from farmer Andrew Kernahan that growing organic grains in the Maritime Provinces is quite the noble challenge. Before we visit with Spearville Flour Mill, a quick update on the National Democratic Dialogue on Canada's Prison Farms that will now be taking place on February 1st. We introduced this live webcast event on last week's episode, and if you haven't already viewed our updates on the Deconstructing Dinner website or our Facebook page, there have been some changes since we first announced the event. As it happens, Prime Minister Stephen Harper made a cabinet shuffle shortly after that announcement, replacing Canada's now previous Minister of Public Safety, Peter Van Loan, with Vic Taves. Because Minister Taves represents a political riding in Manitoba, the location and date of the event has changed. So again, the panel will be hosted now in Steinbach, Manitoba, at the Mennonite Heritage Village on February 1st. The event will be broadcast live over the internet, and as a media partner of the event, Deconstructing Dinner is coordinating setting up a way for anyone tuning in to pose questions to the panelists. Again, the panel has been set up to discuss the in-process closures of Canada's prison farms, a decision that has upset many farmers, eaters, prisoners, and prison workers alike. We featured a one-hour episode on the issue back in July 2009, and the efforts to stop the closures have not stopped. As part of the efforts to raise awareness of the issues, event organizers have chosen to host the event in the riding of the recently appointed Minister of Public Safety, Vic Taves. Invited and confirmed now to sit on the panel will be the NDP's Rural and Community Development critic, Nikki Ashton, Liberal Agriculture critic, Wayne Easter, Liberal Public Safety critic, Mark Holland, and Green Party of Canada candidate, Kate Storey. Minister Taves himself did receive an invite, but despite the event being hosted just down the road from his office, he will not be attending. In his response to the invite, his communications advisor repeated the very same comments that have already infuriated people across the country. That is, quote, that the prison farms are based on an agricultural model from an earlier era. Agriculture has changed, as in many other sources of the economy, capital has replaced labor. End quote. Of course, such a perspective is seen by many to be inaccurate and dangerously ignores the realities of capital-intensive farming and the growing interest in labor-reliant models. Again, the live event will take place on Monday, February 1st, between 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's 4 to 6 p.m. Newfoundland Standard Time, 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. Atlantic Standard Time, 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, 11:30 to 1:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can stay posted to deconstructingdinner.ca or our Facebook page for more info and updates. It was back in September 2009 when, after spending an overnight in the New Brunswick capital of Fredericton, I traveled west on the Trans-Canada Highway. I then made my way down a beautiful country road and arrived in the small hamlet of Spearville, a community that, if it was not your destination, it would likely never be noticed. With only a small number of families living there, it's amazingly supported by multiple food and agricultural businesses. There is a small meat processing operation serving the needs of local hunters and farmers. There's Spearville Farm, operated by Stu Fleischaker and Nancy Cantafio. The farm is a small, heavily diversified farm with products ranging from eggs and meat to vegetables and homemade mustard. They offer home delivery to the Woodstock and Fredericton areas. Stu happens to also be one of the founders of the Spearville Flour Mill, which is located right beside his vegetable garden. And that brings us to one of the features of today's episode, another business in the community, the mill itself. Started in 1982, the Spearville Flour Mill is one of only a small number of small-scale organic flour mills operating in the country, and certainly one of a kind in Canada's Atlantic provinces. Despite the demise of so many small-scale food processors, Spearville has maintained its roots and has further become a well-known name throughout the provinces. Wherever I traveled in New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, there wasn't anywhere I went where the Spearville name was not synonymous with good food. As I arrived in the community, Spearville President Todd Grant and his brother Tony were heating up a portable wood-fired oven that was resting on a flatbed trailer attached to a pickup truck. The oven was about to embark on a journey to Prince Edward Island, where it would later be used to bake breads made with Spearville's organic flours. Todd Grant shared the history of the mill and how he got involved in this unique local food business.
I guess the mill started back in the late 70s, early 80s. It was a community business that basically was built so that farmers could bring their grain to the mill to be cleaned and given back to the farmer himself. That didn't really fly, I guess, so a few years later, one of the gentlemen that actually helped build the building itself decided that he would start a mill So we bought his first load of grain from a local farmer and milled it into flour and sold it to a local bake shop. And perseverance, a desire to have quality food from local farms, and the rest, I guess, is just history. It kept growing from there. I was the first full-time employee back in 90. I come fresh out of high school looking for a place to work. At that time was a modern, average, everyday kid eating food from the grocery store, had no realization, no thoughts of quality and where it come from and things like that. But as my time at the mill evolved, I got very interested. We grew up on a small farm here, myself and my brothers, raised our own meats and milks and things like that. So I guess it wasn't long sinking into me the importance of local food. So back in 91, 92, I expressed an interest in buying into the mill to potentially, hopefully, own it someday to do with it what I felt needed to be done, and you know, I guess the rest is history.
With the Spearville Flour Mill being the only organic mill of its kind in the Maritime Provinces, I asked Todd if the mill was integral to the many farmers throughout the provinces who cultivate organic grains.
I do believe so, yeah. Having an alternative marketplace for your product was what was needed to get people into growing food quality grains. With the hope of organic grains, with the hope of being able to have a successful farm.
So how has that evolved? So, how many farmers right now are supplying here? Where are they coming from?
All over Atlantic Canada. We've probably got 35 to 40 farms, upwards of a couple of thousand acres in Atlantic Canada being farmed organically and producing human foods.
So this is all throughout New Brunswick, PEI, and Nova Scotia?
Yep. Yeah, all over, I guess.
And what are they growing? What's coming into the mill?
We're buying organic spelt, organic oats, organic wheat, the variety Red Fife, rye, some soft winter wheats. We as well had a farmer last year experiment with corn.
Tests with flax.
Coming in, yeah. The tests with flax haven't really proved out yet, but we are doing some trials, I guess. Mm-hmm. Those would be the bulk grains that basically we've built our business from. Mm-hmm.
So, and would you say that the mill has been growing, you know, since you got involved?
Yep, I dare say that, you know, every year we're growing probably 10%. People are starting to get a little concerned about their food and the 100-mile diet. There's lots of little things that have encouraged them to look deeper into the food system out there. And so I believe we're gaining a little support every day. Mm-hmm.
The Spearville Flour Mill currently employs 12 people in production, warehousing, office work, such as marketing, and distribution. The backbone of their business are the many health food stores, buying clubs, and bakeries who they sell to, including national retailers like Sobeys, Atlantic Superstore, which is a Loblaw chain of stores, and Co-op Atlantic, a chain of cooperative grocery stores throughout the Atlantic provinces. Spearville products are only sold in Atlantic stores. President Todd Grant works side by side with his brother Tony, who I also spoke with and who will shortly take us on a tour of the mill and warehouse. And Tony is equally passionate about operating a business that provides the most natural and freshest foods possible.
I'm Tony Grant, Todd's older brother. I'm the middle of three. I guess I came to the mill 6 years ago, electronic technologist by trade. But when my wife and I decided we wanted to start a family, I thought that I should be working closer to home. And Todd had an opportunity at the mill with some, needed some help with management and setting up the business for growth. And so he asked me to come and be a part of the team. I've been very happy to be there, been intrigued by everything that I've seen from the time I walked through the door. Wasn't as aware as I should have been about our food and some of the things that are in our the food that we're eating and some of the easy cures that we have, the easy fixes that we have. And I've really been pleased to have had the opportunity to work at Spearville and work towards a cause that is much bigger than myself. Our family was incredibly lucky to have been raised or had the opportunity to be raised on a small farm in rural New Brunswick. We had our own beef, our own pork, our own eggs, our own chicken, grew a huge garden and did a lot of canning. So not a lot of our food was from the grocery store. As we grew up and moved off on our own, we succumbed to the modern conveniences, and that was where I did a fair bit of my grocery shopping as well. I did have a medical challenge as well. My wife and I wanted to have children. And I wanted to be closer to home, but I developed the disease, acid reflux disease, which, of course, I'm sure you're aware is not a disease at all. It's a diet problem. I was on the road a lot and ate out of restaurants and a lot of processed meats and potato chips and pop and the things most of modern society eat. I guess after 2 weeks on the Nexium, because I had gone through a number of different products over a couple of years trying to control my acid reflux disease, and I had a really bad reaction, blacked out, cold sweats, seeing black splotches, went to the hospital immediately. They did a bunch of blood work and tried to diagnose the problem and came back 3 hours later when I was feeling fine. It affected me for about an hour. 3 hours later when they come back to tell me that I had a flu, nothing more than a flu. I showed him again the Nexium package. I had 8 of the 10 symptoms that it warned about on the back of the package. The doctor assured me it was just a touch of the flu and just go home and take it easy for a week. Gave me a doctor's note. I felt that it was horrible that that doctor wasn't going to attribute any of my reaction, which I had never had any reaction like this before in my life, to the Nexium. So I went to see my family doctor who had prescribed the Nexium to me. He as well refused to make a report on it. He said that symptoms like this have never been reported on a drug like this. If you were going to have any symptoms, it would be within the first 24 hours. And I guess I'm saying, well, maybe it was because doctors like you wouldn't make a report. You know, here I am reporting it, and it did happen, and you are not making this report. So I guess all of these things came together with the right timing. Todd asking me to be a part of the organization as well came together with the right timing for me to come and start working here at the mill and start to realize that I need to take my diet back into my own hands and that I don't have a disease called acid reflux disease. What I had was an eating problem, and I very easily fixed that eating problem by changing the way I eat and starting to eat real food, much like the food that I was raised on when I was growing up.
These are the original stairs of the first co-op.
Just wait there a minute, I'll
sure.
Lights here.
So this is where we would receive grains. The incoming grain would go into one of these three tanks, and if it needed dried, it would go into our dryer, a 6-ton batch dryer right here. Any grain, when it lands here, there's an incoming grain report done, samples taken,
And the audit trail process starts right there when the grain arrives. From there, it would go into our seed plant. And in our seed plant, we have four bins upstairs, two 15-ton, two 12-ton. And they will hold the grain until we're ready to bring it down into our seed plant, into the various equipment.
Some of this equipment looks pretty old.
Most of our equipment is old. This is a Ferrano 500. It's probably 60 or 70 years old. To see it in operation, some people might not believe that it could do any kind of a job. It rattles and shakes and bangs. But that's what it's doing, cleaning grain. It needs to rattle and shake and bang. And we do have to do some maintenance to it every year. There's no question about that. But this old gear is solid. You patch it up and it will work forever almost. And then from there it would hit our gravity table. Gravity table is a really neat piece of machinery with the heavy grains going to the top and the lighter grains coming to the bottom, as you can see.
And why are you segregating those?
Well, I guess for a number of reasons. You can see there's some vetch and some small seeds in here, but there are also a lot of these kernels are fusarium damage kernels on this small side, on this light side. But you can see that 99% of the table is covered with good grain, and the fusarium damage is just down here in this lightest section of the table.
This is Deconstructing Dinner, and you're listening to Tony Grant of Spearville Flour Mill, a unique business based in the community of Spearville, New Brunswick. The business processes organic grains grown throughout the Maritime provinces into dozens of products, and Deconstructing Dinner visited the business in September 2009. Photos of the mill are posted on our website at deconstructingdinner.ca and listed under the January 21st, 2010 episode. So from here, where does the grain then go?
From here, I guess once it's cleaned into these wagons, it would go out into the tanks out back, the finished tanks. You've probably seen those on your way by. Not much to see, I guess, just a bunch of grain bins. What do you do? Wagon maintenance? Yeah, so it would come out into one of these tanks out here. From there, it would come back into the mill, which I guess we can go back upstairs. And
if you just get inside that door, you'll be in the light.
So what are we looking at here?
This is a scouring machine. These are both scouring machines.
And scouring is?
Just a final, I guess it's smudding and scouring. Just a final clean before it goes to the mill to knock any of the grain dust off or any small particles out, especially with the oats. You can see on this one that, can't tell you when it was made, but it was patented in the UK in 1838. Very old machines. Still work very well, though. July 23rd, 1872 is the oldest patent date that's printed on it.
So these have certainly been used since the beginning of the mill.
Yes, actually, yeah. These, I think both of these machines, or this one at least, came out of a mill that was in operation in the early 1900s.
Around here?
Yeah, about 10 miles from here. Slater Mill, and it was in operation until probably, I don't know, likely the 20s or 30s thereabouts. But this old equipment was still in it. These two elevators that you see right here came out of that mill as well. These elevators were over 100 years old, believe it or not. It's just a bucket elevator, pretty simple technology. Mm-hmm. A belt on a pulley with buckets. Yeah, so a lot of this equipment was actually used 100 years ago. So this is where the grain would come in from the tanks outside, all labeled very well, and as well a part of the organic process. Anytime that any grain is drawn from any of these tanks, it is recorded in our organic audit trail. How much was used, what it was used for, what pack sizes it went into, and the date that it was milled. This is what we call the mill warehouse. Our offices are upstairs. And when the members of the co-op, the first co-op, were building this building, they didn't have much to work with. Very, very little money to work with. Basically, time and effort was all they had. So you can see they've tried to cover the stack wall a number of times with stucco to get some measure of insulation from the winter winds. This area that we're standing in right now, a small section, was their original warehouse. This was the first addition to the mill. So if we want to step in here, mm-hmm. This is the original mill,
still where 90% of the processing takes place now. There are a number of machines in here. Most of the machines that are here, we have done a lot of work to them. Some of them almost been completely rebuilt. We pride ourselves in rebuilding old equipment. I guess it's our opinion, rather than spending $25,000 on new, if I can buy a shell for $2,000 and put $5,000 into labor to fix it back up, I'm much better off. I've got that guy working for me, and where there's going to be some slack time, and why not have him working for me rather than going home with short hours some weeks.
As Tony Grant concluded his tour of the mill operation of the Spearville Flour Mill, we made our way a few hundred meters down the road, where the business maintains their warehouse space. Upon walking into the warehouse, it became quite clear that the Spearville Flour Mill has grown into becoming a notable distributor of many foods and grocery products.
Most of the product that is in this area, I guess out in the 30 by 30, we have some bulk grains, incoming and outgoing stuff that would be coming in. And in this area, this is where we build most of our health food stores and grocery store orders. You can see it's mostly all cased product. I guess you can see here, salts, and as well, we have a pasta line out of Quebec. We have considered a number of times putting in our own pasta line, but haven't gone that far yet. It's a totally other business, so set aside from our milling. So in here we have a number of products. This section would be for our bakeries and our food group customers who are going to be buying chickpeas and basmati rice and sesame seeds and red lentils, green lentils, buckwheat flour, and all the stuff that they'd be buying in a 25-pound bag or a 55-pound bag. We also have back in here our organic and fair-traded coffees and teas, cocoa, hot chocolate. We have peanut butter crunchy and smooth, and almond butter, cashew butter, toothpaste line. We carry both Tom's of Maine and Green Beaver. We have our maple syrup, maple butter, and maple sugar.
Now, the diversity of products that Spearville Flour Mill distributes might for some seem to be straying from their focus, organically grown local grains. But according to Tony Grant, diversifying their product line and distributing more than just the local grains they process provides greater convenience to their customers. As a result, Spearville has placed itself into a position of maintaining greater distribution and bargaining power.
We try to be the kind of place that a family could source 90% of their groceries from, dried goods at least. You can see here we have a line of environmentally friendly and phosphate-free cleaning supplies, liquid dish, liquid laundry, and all-purpose cleaners. I guess we just try to make it easy for our customers to place an order with us. And if customer demand says we should carry Green Beaver Company out of Markham, Ontario, because Tom's of Maine just got purchased by Colgate Palmolive and is no longer a family-owned and operated company, we had to bring on Green Beaver Company to compete with Tom's of Maine products. In here, this is heated storage as well, or cooled storage in the summer. We carry our blueberry juice and organic apple cider vinegar in there from Annapolis Valley. These two products are both from Nova Scotia. The blueberry juice isn't certified organic, but it is a wild blueberry juice made in Caledonia, Nova Scotia. And Boats apple cider vinegar, wonderful product. There is no other like it, in my opinion. And beautiful, beautiful product. I drink it straight with water. It is delicious. We brought this product on for our health food stores, but we did eventually get this product into Sobeys as well. Superstore hasn't been interested in taking it as of yet, but we still hope that they will someday and support another great family farm in Atlantic Canada.
So you had a role in doing that, in getting it into another store, just because, I guess, of your purchasing power here and distribution power?
Yeah, absolutely. For Boats to be dealing with Sobeys or Superstore just would not happen. They are starting to come back to it a little bit, but as a rule, they don't deal with single product suppliers, I guess.
Perhaps the greatest example of the importance of this business, and really any small independent local food processor and distributor, is found in Spearville's ability to determine how their product arrives at the major grocery retailers set up in the Maritime Provinces. With only three major retailers controlling virtually all of the grocery sales throughout the provinces, getting products produced on a small scale onto their shelves is a difficult task. Even those businesses who are able to are required by some of these retailers to ship to a distribution center first before the product then arrives at the individual stores. This never sat well with Spearville, as it's important to them to ensure that anyone purchasing their product receives it as fresh as possible.
We only deliver direct to the store to help control the product rotation rather than ask the grocery retailers to warehouse our product and rotate it properly. If we're shipping direct to the store, we can somewhat control how fresh that product is going into that store. Well, not somewhat, we can control it. So
they're okay with that, these stores that you do that?
No, I wouldn't say they're okay with it, but that's the only way that we would do business with them. We don't want to, the worst case scenario would be if they warehoused our product, didn't rotate it properly, and put it out on the shelf for sale at, you know, 10 months old or a year old. And as you know, an organic food with no additives, no preservatives should be consumed fresh. So I guess that was a, when we went into Superstore and Sobeys, that was a criteria that we had, is we're going to ship directly to your stores, or else we don't ship at all. And that stuff right there is kind of bad. They don't really like that part of the scenario, that we have that control. Yep. They don't like that a bit. That's the great advantage that we have had in negotiating with the grocery retailers, is that our product is in consumer demand. Consumers will demand our product. If they're looking for Spearville flour mill oatmeal, they won't go buy one of the competitors' brands. They'll go to another store in their city and see if they have it, or another store, or another store. Once they've tried our oatmeal and they understand what they're supporting, they won't buy anybody else's oatmeal. So that gives us tremendous bargaining power when it comes to working with these folks, because they know that the consumer wants our product. Mm-hmm. Tremendous power.
That's Tony Grant of Spearville Flour Mill, located in Spearville, New Brunswick. Deconstructing Dinner visited Spearville in September 2009. Now, we'll return to Spearville later on today's episode, but first, let's meet another important component of this organic grain economy operating throughout Canada's maritime provinces, the farmers. Spearville has played an integral role for dozens of farmers throughout New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island, and Nova Scotia. It was there in Nova Scotia, en route to Spearville, where I first met farmer Andrew Kernahan. Andrew farms in the community of Parsborough, not too far from the New Brunswick border. There was quite a lot to learn from Andrew, whether it was the incredible challenges of growing grain in a maritime climate, or his perspectives on the local food movement in the area. But first, Andrew shared the history of Parsborough and the role of agriculture around the community. Both the story of Parsborough and Andrew's farm are similar ones to many rural areas throughout North America.
The background to Parsborough is it exists here because because there was once a ferry connection across to Wolfville and Windsor on the other side. So Parsborough was on the most direct route between Halifax and Fredericton, or, you know, New Brunswick. And so instead of going around via Truro as you drove, people would make their way by horse and carriage to Wolfville, get on a boat, come across to Parsborough, and then go on from Parsborough. So that's why Parsborough exists in the place it exists. And in fact, for a lot of its lifetime, this part of Parsborough was not part of the Cumberland County, which is the county we're in on this side, but part of Kings County, which is the county on the other side around Wolfville. Parsborough was always it was quite a wealthy town one time. There was a lot of good wood for making ships. And back in the 19th century, when Nova Scotia had the world's fourth largest merchant marine, it was built with wood from a lot along the Parsborough shore. And if you were in Parsborough, you'd have seen a lot of lovely old houses that date from that time, from really quite wealthy people. Parsborough had an opera house, a hotel. Shows came here before, on their way to New York. I mean, this is in the but things have been downhill since the demise of wooden ships. So there was agricultural land to feed Parsborough, growing probably oats and I believe buckwheat. Possibly some wheat, and of course hay and dairy cattle and butter, and probably self-sufficient. There would have been a lot more land cleared then than now, and all this land, it's not good land around here. It's mostly class 4 land, barely usable for grain and for grain growing, but it turned out to be really good for berries. So an awful lot of this old cleared farmland that would otherwise have gone back into scrub has gone into blueberry land, low bush blueberries, so-called wild blueberries, which Now, they create a problem for me farming organically because I have to maintain these huge buffer zones between my land and the and how much spray that is put on these blueberries. But they have been extremely up until this year. The market seems to have fallen drastically, but they have been very, very profitable for people who own blueberry land. All this old scrub land that they inherited from people who had left the land in the 50s and has been turned into land worth was as valuable agricultural land as there is in anywhere in Canada, I would think. You know, sells between $3,000-$5,000 an acre for this land, like sort of prime Ontario corn land. Mm-hmm. That's worked fairly well. There's a couple of people like myself who've been keeping cattle and still do, and growing a bit of grain, but that's dying out. There's less and less of that. Some of the older folks are retiring. I don't think there's going to be any farming done there.
Well, the Parsboro area is not ideal for farming. Andrew Kernahan's father was nevertheless one of many small-scale farmers in the area. Andrew shared the history of the farm from the days when small-scale farming was a viable business up until today, where Andrew has now become a supplier to the Spearville Flour Mill.
We're on a back road, I guess, behind Parsboro. I call it the Parsboro Bypass because it goes between the Truro Road and the Amherst Road of the old Route 2, which used to be the Trans-Canada once upon a time. Mm-hmm. At that time, of course, well, Parsboro was right on the route of everybody going across the country, but no longer. They built a big highway through the mountains behind us here. And right. My father came here from Ireland in the early 50s, just before I was born. And he is actually a doctor, and that was how he really made a living. But he grew up on a farm and wanted to farm again. His father was a farmer. He was a time when, you know, farmers sent their sons off to be doctors. So if there wasn't enough land to divide it between the sons, then some of them were sent off to college, and the lucky or unlucky one got to stay behind. And so my father bought a farm, and then he decided he'd get into it in a bigger way, and he had an opportunity to buy some farms in the early 50s. And this area was filled with actually small dairy farms. They were people who would have about six or eight cows, and they would put the cream out by the road for the dairy truck to pick up, which was taken somewhere and turned into butter. And I think they mostly kept the skim milk and raised pigs on it or raised calves on it or something. So a person could make a living at the time with half a dozen dairy cows and maybe 20 or 30 acres of land. And this piece that you're sitting in, which goes for about 2 miles along this road, it was four different farms once upon a time. And each of them probably smaller than what's here now, because my father bought these farms as people were leaving the land in the early 50s, because six dairy cows was no longer a viable existence. And I think people wanted to go to the city and buy a pickup truck or something. And so they were leaving the land. It was also at the time when, I suppose, when horses were being replaced by tractors and farmers could do more. So it was no longer necessary, you know, to have one guy with a scythe or a horse. So Dad bought these farms sometime in the 50s and cleared quite a bit more of the land. Mostly, he thought mostly of cattle, so this is all pasture land here, except grain land up there on the flat, and then there's more grain land down there. That is oats, and that's oats for the Spearville hullless oats for their porridge.
Farmer Andrew Kernahan was, like many farmers, the child of a farming family who chose to seek a career off the farm, which in Andrew's case was in the field of philosophy. When that path didn't work out entirely as planned, Andrew returned to the farm, and he later chose a path of organic production as his focus.
I came back to the farm in the 80s. 1983, I moved back. I hadn't previously done... I worked on the farm as a kid in the summer, you know, lifting bales of hay and stuff. But I didn't hugely want to be a farmer back then. I wanted to be a scientist. And I went away to college and did various things. I got a PhD in philosophy, and then decided I didn't really want to do what was necessary to be a philosophy professor. Well, I was partly influenced by the Back to the Land movement, you know, because a lot of people were interested in going in. I was also I didn't like the price he had to pay to be a philosophy professor at the time, which was going, you know, working probably in the States or something, because there weren't a lot of jobs for the profession I'd chosen. So I thought this would be more interesting, which it has been, really, except not as lucrative as I would like, but it's certainly been it's been more interesting. I still do philosophy in the winters. Okay. Like, I teach at the Agriculture College. I write stuff. I've written scholarly articles and a scholarly book and that sort of stuff, but this has been the source of my meager living. How I got into the organics was back in the 90s, I was asked to teach this course on environmental ethics at the Agriculture College, and I taught it to some extent as the ethical considerations between conventional and organic agriculture. And after I'd done it for a couple of years, I sort of convinced myself that perhaps I should take our farm in the organic direction. But it couldn't be done immediately because it was a beef farm, and we had housing for beef cattle that wouldn't really work out with an organic situation, though we were doing a lot of things, like we weren't using sprays, and we were doing a lot of things semi-organically. But so in order to make it organic, I had to take the farm eventually out of beef cattle.
This is Deconstructing Dinner, a syndicated weekly radio show produced in Nelson, British Columbia at Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY. I'm John Steinman. If you enjoy this show, our weekly content, and the wealth of additional resources that we post to our website each week, we encourage you to help support this show by donating through our website at deconstructingdinner.ca. On today's episode, we're learning of the regional organic grain movement that surprisingly is alive and well throughout the maritime provinces of Canada. As an important backbone to the movement, we have already now visited with the Spearville Flour Mill, which since 1982 has and continues to be an important piece of the local food system. We've since traveled to Parsborough, Nova Scotia, where we're now hearing from farmer Andrew Kernahan, one of the dozens of farmers supplying Spearville with organically grown grains. While growing grains in the climate of the region is not without its challenges, Andrew has successfully harvested a number of crops from his land. In this next clip, he uses the term rotation, which refers to the annual cycle of crops planted on a specific piece of land. A good rotation is critical to ensure that a healthy balance of nutrients are extracted and returned from the soil each year.
Well, I've tried a lot of things. I don't have either really good land or a very good climate. I mean, we're just not warm enough in this part. We're on the north shore of the Minas Basin, and we get the wind coming up the Bay of Fundy. The south side, which is the kind of Annapolis Valley, which is quite famous for apples, and it's got a great little climate there that's probably starts warm 2 weeks warmer than here. It's growing degree days are much higher, and probably a slightly better fall, just because they're sheltered by between the north and south mountains, and the weather system of the Bay of Fundy can't get at them. If I was designing a farm, I probably wouldn't pick to do it here, and there's other places in Nova Scotia which would be a little better. But I'm farming with what I've got, right? Trying to make it so. But I'm having trouble actually with rotation design. I'm finding that for organic farming, you have to have a pretty reasonable rotation. And I'm fine. I would like to have. I grow red clover as my legume to power the rotation, and I can grow grains. I can't grow winter cereals. I can grow winter rye, which is the hardiest of them, but winter wheat doesn't live here. I'm having trouble finding a fourth. You really don't want to grow grain more than maybe twice in a rotation. And I can certainly grow red clover. I keep trying all these things, fava beans. I've got a field of those that aren't doing that well. I think I may have to give up on that. And I probably will have to grow maybe two grains in red clover. It's a little bit tight, the rotation. But if I grow, say, wheat notes and the red clover, trying to learn to grow the red clover for seed, since I don't have cattle. It's normally fed to cattle and made hay. You make hay and feed cattle. So I'm trying to learn how to thrash the red clover. We have good crops of red clover. We have lots of red clover flowers, umbels, I think they're called, these round flowers. And we have lots of bumblebees who pollinate them. And there's lots of seed in the field, but I'm just having a little difficulty learning how to thrash the seed out of the red clover.
Andrew Kernahan sharing some of the challenges of farming that those of us in cities might never hear about. Of the wheats Andrew grows are spelt and red fife, among others. Red fife is a heritage variety that has been featured here on the show before.
Yeah, 3 years ago, I grew a fair-sized field for Spearville. Spearville is interested in promoting it because it gives them something that you know that other mills don't have, right? Red 5 flower. And so I grew 40 acres for them. It worked out all right. Then I grew, I think, 100 acres for them last year and didn't do well. We had a really bad fusarium. We had a really wet summer. We've actually had grain growing. The climate's changed. I think it's an oscillation, not necessarily a climate change thing, but we've had very, very wet summers for the last 4 years. Before that, we had quite dry summers. Grains, of course, grow better in dry summers than they do in wet ones. And anyway, I had a bad attack of fusarium in the red fife last year. They were able to use some of it, but so this year I tried another 100 acres of the red fife. It grew a lot better. There was a lot less fusarium problems.
In closing up my conversation with farmer Andrew Kernahan, he did share the fears that he as a farmer has for the future viability of regional food systems. But as we'll hear in this last segment from my conversation with him, it's a business like Spearville and the increasing interest among eaters to support local products that gives Andrew a glimmer of hope.
Spearville is extremely supportive of this idea. I mean, they're not just, as far as I understand, a business. Hopefully they're a business too, and hopefully they're doing well, but they're also committed to providing a way of getting grain grown in the Atlantic provinces. That I know of, there are three grain mills that could produce wheat flour in the Atlantic provinces. One's a huge Dover mill factory in Halifax, which brings in, you know, bread wheat from Saskatchewan, turns them into flour, and sends them around. I think there's a little grist mill, a little tiny one somewhere in the middle of Nova Scotia, Balmoral Mill. And there's Spearville, and Spearville is in New Brunswick, halfway up New Brunswick, and it's the interest in local food is certainly making a difference for quite a few farmers, and possibly indirectly for me, because shipping to Spearville, and Spearville being as local as you can get in an area like this. I mean, it's not within 100 miles, but it is. It's also not from Saskatchewan either, the products that they sell. And they are expanding. So in that sense, and for grain, for organic grain, there's room for expansion, but it depends on Spearville's ability to find markets for their grain.
That was Andrew Kernahan, an organic farmer in Parsboro, Nova Scotia. Andrew is also the board president of ACORN, the Atlantic Canadian Organic Regional Network. From Parsboro, Deconstructing Dinner made its way to Spearville, New Brunswick, where we were visiting just earlier on today's broadcast. In coming back to the Spearville Flour Mill, where farmers like Andrew Kernahan sell too, we hear the thoughts from Spearville's Todd and Tony Grant. It was during our conversation that I asked the Grants their perspectives on what size farm is ideal for an organic grain farmer in the Maritime Provinces to make an adequate living growing grain. While the Spearville Flour Mill has proven to be a key piece of the answer, there are many more pieces involved.
I don't know much about farming. I'm a miller, not a farmer. I would probably believe that there is no size of farm that is viable. Our farming community is in desperate, desperate shape. I don't know that I'm the complete answer for a viable farm. I'm not sure that the market is ready for that yet. We're being subsidized with cheap food. For a long time, we've been taught that cheap food is what we want to eat for some reason. I guess in Atlantic Canada, we've never had any huge amount of money here. So everybody's always trying to watch their dollars and pennies, and cheap food is one of those areas that they can save a few cents. Mm-hmm. We're in desperate shape, and I don't know what it's going to take to have a viable farm.
Well, if I could jump in there on that one, one of the reasons that they aren't concerned or appreciate the idea of cheap food is because they don't understand the true cost of that cheap food. They don't understand that we're building superhighways to have a third of the trucks on the road carrying our food back and forth. They don't understand that we're subsidizing the businesses that are building the trucks and building the brake pads and building the tires and building the superhighways and plowing these superhighways and maintaining them. The whole food delivery system that we have right now is so subsidized. Well, we can buy California carrots for $1.99, and it's $3 to buy the Atlantic Canadian grown, and the farmer really can't survive selling them at that price. because it is so subsidized. And people just don't realize the true cost. When you send those dollars away from your community, your neighbors don't have the money to be able to afford to buy other things as well. So our biggest challenge is to educate the public and try to drive the public will to want to support a community and want to understand that they are supporting their neighbors in their community and want to eat good food.
This is Deconstructing Dinner. Despite the somewhat grim outlook on the future viability of farmers in the Maritime Provinces, Todd and Tony Grant of Spearville Flour Mill remain optimistic. And as we stood beside their portable wood-fired oven, it was clear that the Grants are still happy to celebrate food and the unique flavor of their products. As mentioned at the top of the hour, much of our conversation took place beside an oven, which rested atop a flatbed trailer. The oven was being heated up just moments before Todd was to then travel to Prince Edward Island to participate in an organic food festival taking place there. The oven was a great reminder of what all the challenges and opportunities discussed on today's broadcast are really all about: enjoying fresh, healthy, and tasty food grown close to home.
This is a wood-fired masonry oven. It's a Le Panneul kit from France. The metal work, the copper dome, and the steel tray and the trailer were all built in Skowhegan, Maine, by Maine Wood Heat Company. We were intrigued by the oven as a promotional tool for us when Maine Wood Heat brought their oven up to cook some pizzas with our flour, some local cheeses from the Annapolis Valley, and vegetables from the Annapolis Valley as well, organically grown. A group there that was called a cooperative that was trying to operate in the Annapolis Valley. They supplied the vegetables and the cheese. We brought the dough and the oven and cooked pizza at Agrifest in Canning, Nova Scotia in 2005, I think it was something. So we were intrigued by the oven and its the possibilities that it would bring with it to be able to market products like we're selling. So we purchased one of our own. And as well, I guess, in that endeavor of purchasing one and understanding what they are and where they're from and how perfect a baking device they are, we also decided that it would be great if we could sell the kits to some folks here in Atlantic Canada and have them as well showcase our products by baking in the best possible baking device that they could get. They definitely are a mark above anything else that I've worked with as far as baking goes. The flavor of anything that we've cooked in there is unbelievable. From breads and baguettes and cakes and pies and even just flatbreads and potato wedges, chicken, smoked ham, just anything that you would bake in an oven comes out of this oven tasting beautiful.
So this is going to be on the highway quite a ways. Is the idea right now to get it hot before you arrive?
Yep, to have the heat driven clear through the stones will make it much easier to fire tomorrow morning. They're baking in this on PEI tomorrow morning. Todd will probably fire it once he gets to PEI tonight again, just to have it good and warm overnight. And then when he starts his fire tomorrow, it'll just be a half-hour fire, and it'll be right up to baking temperature.
Tony Grant of New Brunswick's Spearville Flour Mill. A reminder that today's episode is archived online at deconstructingdinner.ca and posted under the January 21st, 2010 broadcast. On the page, you'll find more resources about today's topic, including photos and unheard audio from our Spearville Flour Mill visit and of Andrew Kernahan. And another quick reminder to mark your calendars for the upcoming National Democratic Dialogue on the Future of Canada's Prison Farms. The live webcast from Steinbach, Manitoba will be on February 1st at 1:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. Tune in to hear members of Parliament discuss the controversial closures of the prison farm program that we first featured on the show back in July 2009. Deconstructing Dinner is a media partner in this upcoming February 1st event, and you can stay posted to our website and Facebook page for more information and updates. And in closing out today's show, here once again are Todd and Tony Grant speaking of the future of Spearville and the future of small-scale milling in Canada.
I think that's another thing that people don't understand, and that's one of the reasons why we still keep a sewed bag. Our closure on the bag is a stitch. I think it gives the consumer confidence that this product was looked over by a human being. This wasn't a machine, form, fill, seal, that chick-a-ponk, 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 you know, 1,000 bags an hour, that it's You know, they dump product in from a bulk truck in the front end of it, and out of the other end, it comes cased and palletized. When they see our products sewed with a stitcher, they know that there was a human that traced this number, checked out this company to make sure that it was certified organic, followed the process through. When they were bagging my product, they were inspecting it and looking it over, and then it was sewed by hand and put into this case. And as well, not only should that give you some food security that it was looked over by a human being, but as well, it was a human being who now has money to be able to send their kid to college and to be able to buy food and to contribute in their community. So it was a job, not a machine. It was a job that sewed that bag for you, a person in your community. So that's something that we really like about the way that the scale that we're on right now, so that we can control it that way.
I see us growing somewhat, but I don't ever desire to have 30 or 50 employees. I believe there's room for many smaller mills like me out and around there, but we've lost all of the knowledge base and farmer base, so it's going to be a long road to get something like Spearville. We've been in the business for 26 years, mm-hmm. and they haven't been easy years. The food production system is the next best thing to farming.
I guess as far as where Spearville is going, we have a number of times, just to be prudent, and I guess on behalf of our farmer base here, as we've seen it grow and have been concerned that they may outgrow our production needs, we have looked at other markets, like the New England market. We'll throw that one out there. We don't feel that it is really our place to be in the New England market, even though Atlantica, a bioregion in eastern Canada, would include New England if we didn't have the border in between us. We should be able to supply food for New England. However, with the FDA and Customs Border Services, U.S. Customs Border Services, and all the things that they can, all the wrenches they can throw into the gears, we've decided that we probably should stay out of that market and try to grow our business here in Atlantic Canada by trying to find local support, by taking an oven like this out on the road and trying to show people that yes, you can bake with whole grains, and yes, it does taste better, especially when it's fresh and local, and there is going to be an economic benefit in your community because you are making these choices. So we have decided to invest here in Atlantic Canada and to try to make our efforts of growth here in Atlantic Canada. We're still less than 1% of the cereal grain products that are consumed in Atlantic Canada. We're still less than 1% of the market. We do have a nice steady growth rate, and that's the way we like to keep it, slow and controlled. We have been approached a number of times by a number of different groups about taking our model somewhere else, say to New England or in Ontario or other areas. However, in the past, I guess we have felt that we should leave them to develop on their own and in their own way, and we've provided a little bit of advice to them, but keep it at more than an arm's length. There have been a number of them who wanted us to franchise or satellite an operation in another area, and we've decided that we want to keep our roots right here in Atlantic Canada at this point.
And that was this week's edition of Deconstructing Dinner, produced and recorded at Nelson, British Columbia's Kootenai Co-op Radio. I've been your host, John Steinman. I thank my technical assistant, John Ryan. The theme music for Deconstructing Dinner is courtesy of Nelson area resident Adam Shake. This radio show was provided free of charge to campus community radio stations across the country and relies on the financial support from you, the listener. Support for the program can be donated through our website at deconstructingdinner.ca or by dialing 250-352-9600.